So those verses state that Maharaj Parikshit, who could fight 1,000 enemies single-handedly, thus pacified the personality of religion and the earth. Then he took up his sharp sword to kill the personality of Kali, who is the cause of all irreligion. When the personality of Kali understood that the king was willing to kill him, he at once abandoned the dress of a king and, under pressure of fear, completely surrendered to him, bowing his head. Maharaj Parikshit, who was qualified to accept surrender and worthy of being sung in history, did not kill the poor surrendered and fallen Kali, but smiled compassionately, for he was kind to the poor. Sudha Goswami said, Maharaj Parikshit, thus being petitioned by the personality of Kali, gave him permission to reside in places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter were performed. The personality of Kali asked for something more, and because of his begging, the king gave him permission to live where there is gold, because wherever there is gold, there is also falsity, intoxication, lust, envy, and enmity. So section 17.2, Adhyaya Prakashika, the chapter at a glance. Maharaj Parikshit challenged and threatens the low-class man dressed as a king who is beating the cow and the bull. That's a summary of verses 1 through 6. Maharaj Parikshit then questions and consoles the cow and the bull. Verses 7 through 16. The bull answers Maharaj Parikshit's inquiries about the cause of his distress. After hearing the bull's reply, Maharaj Parikshit recognizes the bull to be the personality of religion, Dharma, and begins to answer him with words full of respect. 17 through 23. Maharaj Parikshit, upon concluding his reply to Dharma, prepares to kill Kali. But Kali submissively bows down and surrenders to the king. Maharaj Parikshit spares Kali's life, but orders his banishment. Kali requests a place where he can live according to his nature without fear. 24 through 37. Maharaj Parikshit gives Kali permission to dwell in 5 places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter take place, and where gold is hoarded. Genuine Brahmins and sannyasis should never come in contact with such places. After Maharaj Parikshit sends Kali away, he reestablishes religion and begins his reign. 38 through 45. Section 17.3, Shloka Anushardhanam, summary study of the verses. Sudha Goswami continues his narration, describing for the sages that upon his arrival at the place where Dharma and Bhumi had been conversing, in the forms of a bull and a cow, King Parikshit saw a Shudra in the dress of a king beating the cow and bull with his club as if they had no protector. The bull was as white as a lotus flower. As he stood upon one leg, the bull was so terrified that his entire body trembled and he was passing urine. The cow was bereft of her calf, and due to being beaten upon the legs, she was very weak and distressed. With tears in her eyes, she was hankering for some grass in the field. With a deep and thunderous voice, Maharaj Parikshit immediately challenged the offender. Who are you? By your dress, you appear to be posing as a godly king, and yet you dare to oppose religious principles by attempting to kill helpless creatures within my kingdom. You rogue, are you trying to beat an innocent cow in a secluded place because Krishna and Arjuna are now out of sight? With this offense, you deserve to be killed by me. Summary of verses 4 through 6. Maharaj Parikshit then addressed the bull, Who are you? Are you simply a bull as white as a lotus flower who has lost three legs and is just somehow moving on only one? Or are you a demigod who is causing us grief by having assumed this pitiable form? This is the first time in a kingdom that is protected by the Kuru dynasty that you have been seen to be aggrieved with tears in your eyes. O son of Surabhi, you can now give up your fear. For as long as I am the ruler of the earth, there will be no chance for the Shudra to exploit you. When miscreants terrify the innocent creatures within his kingdom, a king's good name, duration of life, and chance for a good next birth are all spoiled. Therefore, the prime duty of a king is to relieve the sufferings of his subjects. For this reason, I will kill this most wretched man who has dared to attack you. Hoping to get a statement of accusation against the personality of Kali, Maharaj Parikshit questioned the bull, "Who has cut off your three legs? Please tell me who has done this heinous act that is ruining the good reputation of our dynasty. Whoever causes offenseless beings to suffer must fear me, for I am prepared to punish any such person, even though he may be a denizen of Henavan." Summary of verses 7 through 16. Nimesha. In the scriptures, there is mention of apadharma, or occupational duty, at the time of extraordinary happenings. It is said that sometimes the great sage Vishwamitra had to live on the flesh of dogs in some extraordinary dangerous position. In cases of emergency, one may be allowed to live on the flesh of animals of all descriptions, but that does not mean that there should be regular slaughterhouses to feed the animal eaters, and that this system should be encouraged by the state. No one should try to live on flesh in ordinary times simply for the sake of the palate. If one does so, the king or executive head should punish him for gross enjoyment. There are regular scriptural injunctions for different persons engaged in different occupational duties, and one who follows them is called svadharmashta, or faithful in one's prescribed duties. In the Bhagavad Gita 18:48, it is advised that one should not take up his occupational prescribed duties, even if they are not always flawless. It is advised that one should not give up his occupational prescribed duties, even if they are not always flawless. Such svadharma might be violated in case of emergency, if one is forced by circumstances. But they cannot be violated in ordinary times. The state executive head is to see that such svadharma is not changed by the follower, wherever it may be, and he should give all protection to the follower of svadharma. The violator is subject to punishment in terms of the shastra. And the duty of the king is to see that everyone strictly follows his occupational duty as prescribed in the scripture.
This section on the duty and about which we talked on, that's straight.
And also we'll see ahead in the fourth canto, a great king, Maharaj Prithu, actually he is prepared with his sword to kill the same Mother Bhumi in the form of a cow and feed her flesh. Prime duty of a king is to relieve the suffering of his subjects. So at that time, Bhumi, for reasons that she will disclose to Maharaj Prithu, and then Maharaj Prithu changes his plan. But for reasons that the king is not aware of, So at first he takes it that it's all the fault is Bhumi's, that she's withholding her bounties purposefully so that the living entities under his charge are being parched by hunger and thirst. So he's prepared to kill Bhumi, to kill a cow. But that again is extraordinary. That is this apadharma, Prabhupada explains in the purports there, that this is not happening due to ordinary course of events, but because of an extraordinary circumstance. So here, the opposite, that there is one, obviously this is some rascal, because he's lower than a Shudra, dressed in the garments of a king, and he's beating a cow and a bull with a club and enjoying this activity. So Maharaj Parikshit, taking this in and one glance, is pulling out his sword and prepared to dispatch this rascal. And he even says, I am prepared to punish any person who performs such heinous activities, even though he may be a denizen of heaven. And actually, this Kali, we were talking about that the other day, he's a descendant of Brahma by way of Brahma gave appearance to an original son and daughter, who then proceeded to accept one another as husband and wife. They produced also a son and daughter, who again combined and again combined and again. So this is a line of inauspicious personalities. Srila Prabhupada said this, writes in his purport, this generation is for the purpose of destruction. That there are times when there is these types of inauspicious personalities, they can exhibit their power because that is a time of destruction. And so Kali, personality of Kali, and his consort, Harsh Speech, they appear in this line. And so they have a purpose, and that is destruction. So Maharaj Parikshit is here prepared to kill this personality whom he sees to be an upstart, who for no reason, no good reason at all, because there's plenty of nice foodstuffs available in his kingdom. His kingdom is dharmic. He has been protecting the subjects, so he's ready to cut off the head of this personality.
Here it mentioned he is willing to dispatch this person to the Lord of Death, but who he's beating is the Lord of Death. It's very, very interesting. It comes to mind, one of the things is the relationships. Just the king is protecting, and then in it, then you see all these different elements find their perfection. Is that he's expressing this ego and this confidence and, I have come and this has never happened in our line and now I will chastise you. So one could say it's kind of like an attitude or ego, but by doing that, that gives confidence to the citizens.
Yeah.
Because they know that this person's willing to, take that step and, so that's there. And that also is that because of that establishing the relationship, then some interaction is necessary. So sometimes it seems that in these Vedic literatures, you go back to the old Greek and Roman or some of the old English, and that it seems that their poetics move very slowly. But because relationships were important, therefore conversation is there, because it was important to everybody, then everybody would stand around. In a modern thing, he'd walk in and then, Kali would be doing backflips, climbing up trees and, jumping off of funny parachutes and, you know, doing all these funny things. But here's because the relationships are there, then even he's standing there while, you know, conversation is had. And then, you know, because it's, you know, it's, in other words, someone's not just going to, you just don't walk in and just kill them. You know, it's a walk in, they should know what's going on, the whole mood, the proper relationship should be established and all that. And then chastisement is there. Because otherwise, if he had just walked in the modern movie, he would already have his head cut off, and then, you know, then the other two, yeah. It wouldn't have been necessary.
Shoot first, ask questions
later. Yeah, you know, so that he's come in and, you know, stopped the activity, reassured them. Because otherwise, and normally, even if he did come in and cut off the guy's head, still, he couldn't just get on his chariot and walk off, you know, job done. He would have to interact with the cow and bull and assure them and that so that they're comfortable. Otherwise, how do they know it won't happen again? So here it's that they're in the... And then, even if you tell them you will, they may not believe it because they're still in anxiety. You haven't gotten rid of their fear when the punishment has been enacted. But by removing their fear... then they're peaceful. Then when he's punished, then for them that means, yes, this is there, I'll always be peaceful, this king will take care. So even just the method is very socially, psychologically important, is that any chastisement must be done to someone who's going to accept that punishment and that the others feel that it is appropriate. Otherwise, it won't have the... because this punishment is actually for social effect. It's not punishment for punishment's sake, because a wrong is punished, but it should be appropriate to the consciousness of the person. If they've done wrong, the king has told him that this is wrong, and he has an attitude, well, what are you going to do about it? He loses his head. But if he says, oh yes, I'm wrong, I surrender, everything, then that means he's changed, therefore he can be accommodated. You know, and so then he'll be banished. But because Parikit is the emperor of the world, and in this case we're talking world meaning the whole Bhumandala. So that means all the seven islands. Where is he going to go? Because Kali Yuga doesn't operate on the other planetary systems. They're affected, everything goes down, but his work is here. So that means the whole field that he can work in. So he can't perform his occupational duties. So then he asks for some place that is akin to his nature. Like that. It may not be good, you know, as a bad man, but you find me a suitable place, because even the animals, you know, they're not necessarily nice. They sit there, and a very peaceful animal walks by and they pounce out on them and eat them. So you can't call that nice. But it's appropriate for their nature. So then as Kali Yuga, then he has a nature, so there must be some place, somewhere, that he can be accommodated. You know, so then the king even takes care of that, you know, so that's an interesting thing, you know. Just like yesterday came up in the conversation about losing one's rights, you know, for democracy, because the last chapter there was the things on democracy. And so that the criminals, they can't vote, they lose their right to vote. But they have a place in the kingdom, you know, they're given, they can stay in the jail, or even when they get out, then, you know, they're given their you know, freedom to some degree, but still they can't vote, you know, and stuff like that. So there's still there's consideration of the individual so he can carry on his lifestyle, but at the same time there's consideration that it's not according to his call, it's according to the call of, you know, the higher authorities. You know, so Kali will live, but only according to what Parikit Maharaj gives him.
This also speaks for the power of Maharaj Parikshit's presence. Just by appearing there, you can just visualize how the action just froze.
Yeah, he didn't just like Bhima when he was eating the food for Baka.
Yeah.
And Baka came and he just turns his back and keeps eating. And then Baka's beating him on the back, he just keeps eating. Not like that. He had some, yeah, his presence was such that he just invoked that respect.
Because he's representing the Lord, actually. Made clear in these chapters. Especially chapter 18, where Shamika Rishi is telling his son Sringi, you shouldn't have done this because the king is Narendra. He represents God in human society. So Krishna has these four aspects of his personality, and one is Dhirodhata.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Parikshit with his, you know, pulling his sword and threatening to kill Kali and like that. That's manifesting that aspect of Krishna's personality.
Yeah, it's
Dhirodhata.
But in the bull and the cow, then it's Dhirodhata.
Yeah, Dhirodhata. So he's manifesting these aspects of Krishna's own personality because he's a God-conscious king. He's a Mahabhagavata. So actually Krishna's personality is, you know, he's always has Krishna in his heart. He's Parikshit, always looking for Krishna. So Krishna's, those aspects of his personality just effortlessly manifest through him. So you can just imagine when he appeared on the scene, must have, you know, Kali would have just frozen, you know.
He's coming with an Akshahidi also of, you know, soldiers. So it means business. So, because Kali can fly in space, he's a demigod, but he didn't seem to bother trying because he probably knew the king would come after him. It's like when you say Prithu Maharaj, he says, Bhumi, you can run wherever you want in the universe and all this chase you. And she knew that he could do that. He had the power. Because it's one thing if you have more mystic power than the other, what do you care?
Yeah.
But they know that he does have the power. So, you know, his grandfather went to Indraloka in his own body. You know, so, his father is the, you know, moon god's son. So then he's a,
please continue.
Dharma replied, "Your words are just befitting a descendant in the line of the Pandavas. O best among the human beings, it is very difficult for me to ascertain who has caused our suffering, for I have become bewildered by the various opinions of theoretical philosophers." Right? And this is Yamaraj speaking, who sees everybody, whatever they do and what they get. Nimesha 2, in 18th purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, "Although the bull, or the personality of religion, and the cow, the personality of the earth, knew perfectly well that the personality of Kali was the direct cause of their sufferings, still, as devotees of the Lord, they knew well also that without the sanction of the Lord, no one could inflict trouble upon them. According to the Padma Purana, our present trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins. But even those seedling sins also gradually fade away by execution of pure devotional service. Thus, even if the devotees see the mischief mongers, they do not accuse them for the sufferings inflicted. They take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, thinking them to be God-given in small doses, or otherwise the sufferings would have been greater." Maharaj Parikshit wanted to get a statement of an accusation against the direct mischief monger, but they declined to give it on the above-mentioned grounds. Speculative philosophers, however, As will be described in the following verses, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, such speculators are themselves bewildered, and thus they cannot know that the ultimate cause of all causes is the Supreme Personality, is the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. Interesting, just in this, in a section, because Prabhupada mentions about punishing according to the Dharma, and then here he wants a statement of accusation because you have, you know, the witness and then the point that's made. The king has to make the decision. Very interesting is that in there, before someone has made a witness, then they are explained to them what about that they should tell the truth. Because otherwise, truth, if you don't support truth, then you'll have problem. So because the king is trying to
remove any obstacles. He doesn't want to see the citizens also in their next life will have any problem or later in the life because of not telling truth. But interesting to note that it is stated that if telling the truth will cause the death of anybody, then a lie is actually preferable. And the demigods think that this is good. And if he told the truth, that would be sinful. So here they know if they say that this is the guy, that he'll die. So actually them not telling the truth, even on just a moralistic platform, is the actual proper path. Then besides that, because the devotional, then is that you know that it's ultimately the Lord, we are doing in the Lord's sanction. So you can't really say he's the one doing it, because ultimately it only happens to us because of our involvement at some point in the line, you know, something we've done. But it's, I think it's a, what do you say? I think in the Gita also Krishna mentions it about giving up the sense of justice that's important for devotional service, because you can say this is the person who's the direct cause, but ultimately because it's much more, if you say he's the cause, then where's the Lord come into it? So how are you God conscious? And if you're not acknowledging that you as the soul have, by your desire, have desired or done things that have created now this situation, then you're not understanding who you are. So there's no real self-realization. You know, it's maybe, how you say, you know, a judicial realization. You know, I didn't do anything wrong at this moment, and he is, so therefore he's wrong. But I've done something wrong last life, so therefore now the opportunity comes. Yes. No, it can't. No, it. Yes, but the thing is the. Do you understand the question? The question is that he's pointing out that if we take this to its extreme and we follow the natural logical progression, that means then everything's always been going on and there's never the start of an activity. So if there's never a start of activity, all these activities are eternal, so the living entity can't really be. One is, how would you come into it? You know, and
something
then
has to happen for the first
time. Something has to happen for the first time. So it's and understood.
Yeah.
So the point is that there is such a thing as the first time the karmic action is done that starts the cycle. Right? In other words, somebody was the first one to kill the animal, so then the next time then the animal has the opportunity to go back. Once that's started, then it keeps going until one of them drops out of the cycle. But this is very, very important understanding for applying to others. Just from the devotional platform, you should never, ever, ever apply it to yourself. That, I don't deserve this, I never did anything wrong, this is the first time the guy's starting it, so I'm squeaky clean. I've watched one very senior Vaishnava's devotional life go to hell because he took that stand. You always take it that it's because of me. For someone else, then you go, well, you give them the thing, maybe they've made the mistake, they've started this and all that. In other words, it's a very important philosophical point that he's bringing out. But in your own execution of your devotional, so don't use it for your own benefit. Use it for others' benefit, being broad-minded to others. Okay, everybody had a bad day, they made a mistake. But don't apply it to yourself, because it's dangerous. Because then you think, I'm right and everybody else is wrong. Because once you apply it, you can apply it in everything. I've never done anything wrong. In fact, I don't know. I just, you know, popped out of wherever it is, and here I am, and I'm perfect and all that. Does that make some sense? So it's a very important point, because if one is actually intelligent and looks at karma, one has to come up with this point. Would you get a name for it? Yeah, so it does exist in the field of philosophy and logic, but it's used for giving others the benefit. Never use it for yourself. Because there has to be free will, otherwise there can't be free will. You have to be able to choose to start something new. Like that. The situations you're in, those are all coming from your previous
activities that at some point you've done. But what you do in the situation, that's your free will. So in that, you can just react because he did it to you, you react back. But in the same way as you have the free will to not react, like it's been going on now, let's say, for millions of lifetimes that this particular cow I've killed and he's killed me in every lifetime. We just keep coming back and, you know, that thing with that person with the cow head and the cow. It's been going. But I can decide, I've heard from others, I've heard from the scriptures, I don't want to take part in this anymore. So you can stop it. That person still has to get killed. Someone else will do it. You don't have to take part. In the same way as you also have the opportunity, you can start something new if you want. But why start something? Because we already have enough on our plate. You know, why start a few more?
It's like deciding not to kill the cow, you start something new.
Yeah, you start. Yeah, but then it's upliftment. Yeah, it's rather than.
It can also make karma loss.
Yes, and positive rather than negative. Yes, yes. Good point. Because we always think of karma means bad. Right now.
Decide to do something good for a change.
Yeah.
Also, it brought out that the people, I mean, those good intentions you explained are there, but the bull is also bewildered. That'll be brought out shortly. He's also himself bewildered by the influence of the age of Kali, and therefore that is an additional reason why he's failing to. I don't want to give it away because it's in the study guide, but there is a thing he could have said, which he was not able to say due to being himself bewildered by the influence of the age of Kali. And the king. It's also important to understand that Kshatriya, Prabhupada used to point this out, that certain classes, like Kshatriya, they have, under certain time, place, circumstance, the right to kill. So Kshatriya has the right to kill, certainly in this case, the personality of Kali, and that's. But he wanted to make sure that he had that. Maharaj Pariksit wanted to make sure that. That's why he wanted the bull to say something. Because he just wanted to be sure, do I have the right to kill this person? You know, that's his duty.
Yeah.
That's his duty.
It could have been he was just standing there minding his own business, the cow bull came up and started kicking him and stomping on him and everything. He was
Yeah. Actually, I didn't hear this directly from Prabhupada, but remember several times some senior devotees, when I was a quite new devotee, mentioning this, that Prabhupada was, you know, because in the early days of ISKCON, when devotees would go on Sankirtan, that was something very new and unusual, and, you know, some people took it as a kind of, well, in their deluded mode of ignorance state of consciousness, as some kind of weird provocation. So sometimes they just attack devotees, you know, really not even understanding what they were doing. It's just something so weird and so. Yeah. And so the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, what should we do in such a case? If someone comes up and hits us, and Prabhupada said, well, he said, you should ask them, why did you hit me? And if he doesn't give a reasonable answer, you know, maybe you've done something wrong and you didn't know it, and he has a right to hit you. So you should ask them, why did you hit me? And if his answer is not reasonable, then you can hit him back.
It's like Prabhupada with that. On 22nd Avenue, he wanted money for petrol.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada said, you know, what for? And then he explained it and all that. And then after he decided he was crazy, not because of his answer, but because he wanted more than the money that it cost to actually buy a gallon of petrol. You know? It was enough for 10 gallons. You don't need 10 gallons. You're going to burn yourself. You only need one. What do you need 10? You must be crazy.
Hmm.
The personality of religion, continuing to speak in the guise of a bull, continued to present various philosophical positions on the cause of the human condition of suffering. Some philosophers declare one's own self to be the cause of suffering. Others say that it is the superhuman power that is responsible. Still, others claim that one's acts are the cause. There are scientists of gross materialism who explain that all suffering is ultimately caused by nature. Therefore, O King, you must judge for yourself with the help of your good intelligence, and thus ascertain the real culprit. Nimesha 3a, pointing out what all these types of philosophers miss in their speculative accounts of embodied suffering, Srila Prabhupada states in Purport 20, the living being may forget all that he might have done in his past or present life, but one must know that in the same tree of the material body, the individual soul and the supreme soul as Paramatma are sitting like two birds. One of them, the living being, is enjoying the fruits of the tree, whereas the supreme being is there to witness the activities. Therefore, the Paramatma feature, the supreme soul, is actually the witness of all activities of the living being. And only by his direction can the living being remember or forget what he might have done in the past. He is therefore both the all-pervading impersonal Brahman and the localized Paramatma in everyone's heart. He is a knower of all past, present, and future, and nothing can be concealed from him. The devotees know this truth, and therefore they discharge their duties sincerely, without being overly anxious for rewards. Besides that, one cannot estimate the Lord's reactions, either by speculation or by scholarship. Why does he, the Lord, put someone into difficulty and not others? He is the supreme knower of the Vedic knowledge, and thus he is the factual Vedantist. At the same time, he is the compiler of the Vedanta. No one is independent of him, and everyone is engaged in his service in different ways. In the conditioned state, such services are rendered by the living beings under force of the material nature. Whereas in the liberated state, the living being is helped by the spiritual nature in the voluntary loving service of the Lord. There is no incongruity or inebriety in his actions. All are on the path of absolute truth. Bhishma Dev correctly estimated the inconceivable actions of the Lord. Bhagavatam 1.9.43. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me, because now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart. Even in the hearts of the mental speculators, he is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. The conclusion is, therefore, that the sufferings of the representative of religion and the representative of the earth, as present before Maharaj Parikit, were planned to prove that Maharaj Parikit was the ideal executive head because he knew well how to give protection to the cows, the earth, and the Brahmins, religious principles, the two pillars of spiritual advancement. Everyone is under full control of the Lord. He is quite correct in his action when he desires something to be done by someone, irrespective of the consideration of the particular case.
Maybe,
continue with the 3B?
Or I can continue. I wrote. So, Nimesha 3B. Here the compiler of the study guide adds Anuman reasoning to the previous inserted comment. Nimesha 3b is a thought exercise for the student's better understanding of Bhagavad Darshan, the philosophical standpoint of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, on the topic of the embodied suffering of the eternal soul. The student should mark well that in his philosophical discourse, Dharma did not name Kali as the cause of his suffering, neither did he blame the Supreme Lord. Even though, quote, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme, unquote, Bhagavad Gita directly refutes that Sri Krishna causes a living entity's misery or enjoyment in the material condition. And this is quoted from 5.15 of Bhagavad Gita. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. In the study guide to Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15,
we learn that Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita teach the same truth about the Jivatma, as well as about Ishvara, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. The Gita verse cited above alludes to the ignorance that covers the real knowledge of the Jiva as being the actual cause of his bewilderment about the reactions of Papam and Sukritam. In the first canto, we have already met the following important verse that explains the same point. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam tri gunatmakam propi manute nartam tatkritam cha vibhadyate. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. That was spoken by Sutta Goswami. A devotee never holds the Lord responsible for the conditioned soul's happiness and distress. Suffering is inflicted upon the conditioned souls by his deputed Maya Shakti, or material nature. Maya metes out suffering of three kinds, Klesha Traya, in accordance with one's past fruitive activities. This is the version of Bhagavad Shastra. To try to argue otherwise is to display the selfishness that one cherishes at heart. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes the following pertinent observations in Srimad Bhagavat Tatparya 2. Quote, the living entities who are averse to the service of the Lord try to become the objects of service in this material world. And so they become entangled in the wheel of fruitive activities. Such activities are most insignificant. When we try to become the enjoyer and engage our senses in seeking limited pleasure, we become contaminated and thus invite our own ruination. And I took some information out. It was going to it. The subject of real enjoyment being in the spiritual world, which is not really so pertinent here. So then continuing, what is the proof of this? The spotless Purana Srimad Bhagavatam is the proof of this. There are innumerable evidences recorded in the Vedas and literatures in pursuance of the Vedas that support this conclusion. However, because the outlook of those who cultivate mundane knowledge is contaminated, such persons do not accept this evidence. It is something like a person who is unsuccessfully trying to get water in the desert. Actually, there is no water in the desert. It is only a mirage. One should aspire for the actual goal of life. Everything else is unwanted and temporary. Such things create illusion in the minds of the conditioned souls. According to the opinion of many, the philosophy of impersonalism is topmost, but this is not a fact. This concept is full of contamination. It is impure. Srimad Bhagavatam is a spotless evidence. In this literature, there is no opportunity for cheating religion like personal sense enjoyment or liberation. There is no network of selfishness in its teachings. Because people who try to explain the Vedas, Samhitas, and Upanishads on the strength of their academic qualifications are initiated into the path of selfishness, their evidence and reasoning is full of cheating and thus totally unacceptable. A fully surrendered devotee is freed from the onslaught of material nature. Lord Krishna personally takes charge of his pure devotees and then mercifully gives them a token summary punishment. Since he had been put into doubt by the deluding energy as well as by the influence of Kali, Dharma neglected to point out that his sufferings were the causeless mercy of the Lord. This is confirmed in 23p cited below in Nimesha 4. Actually, the sufferings of the cow and the bull had been arranged by the will of the Lord just to show Maharaj Parikshit's ability to give them protection as the ideal executive head. So the point is here is that there is a simple answer that is given in the Bhagavad Shastras to this suffering condition. It is actually said that all philosophy starts from the jiva asking the question, why am I suffering? And atheistic philosophy starts when the jiva either blames the Supreme Lord or removes the Supreme Lord completely. But actually the answer is that suffering is started because of the Jivatma's ignorance of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. There is something interfering with that relationship, and that is the Maya Shakti, who is the deputed agent of the Supreme Lord, who causes trouble to the living entities because of that forgetfulness. They put themselves in a position open to be punished or to be given trouble by the material energy because of having chosen the path of ignorance. They've deliberately chosen to be ignorant of the Lord because they themselves want to be the Lord. So this is the version of the Bhagavad Shastra. And so in a sense we see here that even the personality of religion is to some degree bewildered by this ignorance. Because, that's what I was alluding to before, he could have truthfully said that I am in this condition due to the influence of Maya. But if he was under the influence of Maya, then he was not able to say that. It is said in some Christian circles that the greatest evil deed that the devil ever performed was to cause people not to believe in him. So the greatest success of Maya over the living entities is that she causes the living entities not to understand that she's actually the cause of their troubles. Because this Maya means, as Prabhupada explained once in a morning walk in Hamburg, Germany, he was pointing out how a little tugboat was pulling a great big ship and saying because the ship's own energy, its own motors have been shut down, therefore this tiny little boat is able to pull the ship around. So Prabhupada said, in the same way, when the jiva's own spiritual potency is turned off, that means spiritual potency, devotional service in relationship to the Supreme Lord, when the jiva has shut that down out of his desire to try and enjoy this material world, then that jiva, which is actually constitutionally more powerful than Maya, that is, when he's connected with Krishna, he's more powerful than Maya, then that living entity can be led around by the nose, by the material energy. So, but the living entity can't understand this because he's being led around by the nose, by the material energy. And thus he looks for external causes. He'll blame, I'm suffering because of this, because of that, because of, you know, he'll point out. So out of piety, this innate piety, Dharma didn't want to do that. Dharma didn't want to blame the personality of Kali. He certainly didn't want to blame the Supreme Lord. And he couldn't blame Maya because he was somewhat under the influence of Maya due to this being the age of Kali. He couldn't see clearly how Maya was the cause of his sufferings, because then that would mean he would have to realize that he's actually not suffering at all. You see, that's the point that's made in that quotation by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that the Supreme Lord has nothing to do with the papa or punya of the living entity. Rather, the living entity himself is bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. And that ignorance is Maya. That's how Jiva Goswami explains the cycle of karma. Everything starts with ignorance, avidya. And then coming out of avidya is the bija, the seed of material desire, which fructifies into first aparabdha. Aparabdha is the potential for suffering on the one side. That means suffering will come to him in the form of a next body. And also it manifests as kutam. Kutam means the propensity for further sinful activities. Just like becoming a thief. So a little boy who is, so to speak, innocent, but he sees, and of course, I'm bringing up this example because it's been seen in the school to be relevant. So a little boy sees the opportunity in the library to jimmy open a bookshelf door and to take a book. He sees that opportunity. And so he does it, and there is no immediate reaction that comes. There's no immediate reaction because the librarian is, for whatever reason, slow to realize that a book has been removed. And therefore the boy can enjoy the book for a good long time. But already there's an aparabdha result, and in the form of kutam, and that the boy thinks, yeah, I can go back and open another shelf door, and take another book, whatever I want to. This is cool. So he starts to develop the mentality of a thief, which is already a sinful reaction. This is called aparabdha, sinful reaction, under the category of kutam, sinful propensity. But sooner or later, the parabdha karma will crop up, will manifest. He will get caught. He will be punished. And Prabhupada says, even if the state laws are negligent in this regard, even if a criminal is successful, he performs the perfect crime. In other words, he covers his tracks. He just erases all leads that lead to him, and he gets away with it. But he cannot escape from the law of God. So in his next life, he will be punished. He will get an appropriate body for having performed this sinful activity. And on top of it, he will have cultivated this sinful propensity. So that not only will he get another body, but he'll get another body that has the mentality to perform the same kind of sinful activity that he performed in this life. And thus, sinful activities will go on in the next life, and
along with the reactions.
Along with the reactions, that means he'll be caught, etc., etc., etc. And then all of this goes back to, again, avidya. You see? It's coming out of avidya like Shyamasundara Prabhu was talking about the first time. The first time is coming out of avidya, ignorance. But then goes back to avidya. It's a cycle. It's a cycle that returns to avidya. That this is all happening again and again because the soul is in ignorance. It happened in the first place because the soul is in ignorance. And it keeps happening again and again because the soul remains in ignorance. The soul remains under the influence of the material energy. Not knowing that constitutionally, in relationship to Krishna, he's like it is. It's been stated here that these material activities are by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in that quote from Srimad Bhagavat Tatpaya. These material activities are insignificant. They actually have no significance with regard to the spiritual nature of the living entity. He's not getting anything he actually desires from them. Because what he really desires as a spirit soul is Krishna. So he's not getting Krishna from them, so whatever he's getting is just insignificant. He's just wasting time, in other words. He's just being stupid. But the result of this stupidity is that he's coming progressively more and more and more and more under this ignorance, which is bringing him more and more and more and more suffering. The suffering being the illusion that I am not spirit soul, but I am the body. You know that like Prabhupada once said, if a bag of chemicals falls off a shelf onto the floor, what's that to you? You see? If in the godown you have a bag of, I don't know, this, what's this stuff for, for insects? Yeah. Gamaxine, yeah. So if a bag of gamaxine falls off the shelf onto the floor and breaks open and spills, what's that to you? Well, it's a mess you got to clean up, but it's no direct pain for you. But if you are thinking, I am that bag of gamaxine, and it falls off the shelf and breaks open, then, oh no! I split open. My insides are spilling out all over the floor. Oh God, oh, this is so terrible. That's the ignorance that we identify with this material situation. And then progressively it's just going to get worse and 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 worse. So the personality of religion that's pointed out here, he could have said, this is all due to the Maya Shakti. But in order to be able to say that, he would have had to have been in his pure spiritual position. But he's a demigod, so even the demigods are not quite in their pure spiritual position. Yeah, so they're somewhat subject to illusion. So he was, yeah, even the demigods, by the potency of the Lord. So he was unable to say that. And being a devotee, he couldn't blame the Lord. And, you know, being pious, he also didn't blame Kali either. Dharma is not one of the 12.
Yamaraj.
Yes,
he is. But at the same time, as we see, like Arjuna, who's an eternal associate, that by the Lord's desire, then they'll put... It's mentioned that someone will have a reaction to something because either they need it for their own correction.
Personalities like the demigods, that is the Vishnu Maya. It's a special category. It's not the Maya that operates on other, demons and ordinary human beings. There's a special Vishnu Maya. So, in this case, for the purpose of glorifying Maharaj Parikshit, that Vishnu Maya covered Dharmaraj. So they was unable to say it's Vishnu Maya. That's what happens when you're covered. You're unable to see what's covering.
I mean, it's a pretty good Maya, because even when Krishna exercises, even Balaram can't tell. He can get symptoms. Like Anuman, he can tell there's some smoke, there's something going on here. Yeah. Like he couldn't tell that Krishna expanded as a cowherd boy, as a cat. He thought something's going on here, there's some, like that. So I think also in that whole lili with I forget, marriage of Lakshmana, I think, in that. Like that, Ghatodgach was involved, and so Krishna gave Balaram, Ghatodgach, the power
to create an illusion that even Balaram couldn't understand. Like that, he took the form of the girl. So then, when they were trying to marry this girl, I think, to Duryodhana's son, like that, then, because Krishna didn't really want it to happen, then it wasn't functioning. You know, it's like, you know, you have the part where the cloth is over the girl's face when she first comes, and then he takes the first look. So when he opens it up, then, you know, Gadodgach takes his natural form. You know, so he thinks this beautiful girl has, you know, teeth and, you know, like this. You know, so everyone thinks, oh, he fainted because she's so beautiful. You know, or then they put the hand on top of the other hand and tie the garland for pouring the water, the kanyadan. So just he squeezes his hand and then he faints because of the pain. So everyone's thinking it's going, you know, natural romantic, like that.
Sometimes in astrology, it's seen that someone is to be married three times, and so to avoid that, then they get married to a banana tree. Do they do the same thing? Put a cloth over it, and then you lift it, and you see it's a banana tree?
No.
The banana tree program doesn't work.
Yeah. You just chant the mantras.
Oh, you're not recommending that?
No.
Oh.
It's
the South tradition.
What's that?
I think they do it in South a lot.
People might do it, but it doesn't work. There's a lot of things people might do, but it doesn't work.
Unless there's such great affection. Can I say that? Kofta Sabji, maybe?
Students enrolled, full-timers, essay question. Yes? To be distributed? So please don't leave if you're one of those students who is obliged to write an essay this weekend. Don't leave without taking. You're probably going to hate me. This is not such an easy one.
God's not the fault. It's not that. Because of your karma of having enrolled in the course, therefore now the reaction has come, and now.
Actually, you're all, Krishna's spirit soul is gyani, full of all knowledge. Only it's avritam gyanamaitana, gyaninas nityavairanam. You don't know the answer only because of the covering of Maya. It's not my fault.
You might get a few